This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. If you designate your Thrivent Choice dollars to Issues Etc. online before October 31st, Thrivent will designate an additional $25 to Issues Etc. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio and give an additional $25 to LPR, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is one of those stories that is standard and included in every children's Bible, although sometimes they have a hard time picturing it. I mean, how do you picture Jacob, a man, wrestling with God? How do you picture that? Usually it's some kind of angelic figure, shadowy figure, sneaking up on Jacob and kind of ambushing him there by night. How do we understand this story? It's completely familiar to all of us. Jacob, in the middle of the night, wrestles with this angel that turns out to be the Lord himself. And then in the end, Jacob is declared the victor, like a boxing match, kind of raises his arm over his head. He walks away limping and with a new name. But what does all of it mean? How does it fit into Jacob's life? What does it mean for us today? Joining us to talk about Christ in the Old Testament today, Genesis 32, the famous story of Jacob wrestling with God. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer, he's pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Los Alamos, New Mexico, and he's host of a weekly radio talk show called Redeemer Theological Academy. Brian, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, it's great to be here, Todd.
What does it mean, this story?
Yeah, that's, what does this mean? A very good Lutheran question for the text. And that's actually the question we should take to the text, for the Lord reveals to us his knowledge of salvation in the written scriptures. And when we look at a text, we ask the question, what does this mean? Why is the Lord revealing this event to us? What is the Lord teaching to us? And so when you look at this text, you follow the life of Jacob. And you see that Jacob is a real person, just like you and I, that he's not a cardboard saint, a plastic saint, but he is a believer in the midst of a fallen world who is justified by faith, who clings to the promise of God that there is going to be one who will renew creation, who will restore creation. And so for Jacob, he's living in this fallen world, living with the promise, but yet he's trying to wrestle with these things literally and metaphorically, and we can get into that in a second. But what happens with Jacob is that you got to remember in the context that this is the man who has the blessing from his father Isaac, that through Jacob, the seed who's going to crush the serpent's head will come. And so here's Jacob who kind of gets this blessing in a rather deceitful manner, as we know the story from Sunday school as a kid, is that he kind of, in a way, he weasels his way through it with Esau, who was going to be the one who has the right of the firstborn. And so in this text, this is where Jacob is now going to have to confront Esau face to face. For Jacob has been off in another land. He had that revelation in which God came to Jacob in a dream, assuring Jacob that he has this promise. And then he's off in another land, and now he's coming back to the land where Esau, his brother, is. And so Jacob is wrestling with this whole spiritual reality that now he's got to face his brother that he kind of swindled out of this birthright. And so he's wondered, what is my brother going to think? And so in the midst of this, this is exactly where God comes to him in this situation. And you have this wrestling match, if you will, where God assures Jacob that he is with him in the midst of these struggles.
Okay, so to kind of put it briefly there, Jacob is fearing for not only himself but his whole family. The account begins with Jacob sending everybody to essentially a safe place because he plans to go up and although when he finally does meet Esau, he sends everybody ahead of him, you know, to kind of soften the guy up. But is God saying to Jacob, among many other things here, you think that Esau is your main problem? You think that you are wrestling against, you're going to have to fight your brother, but you've left me out of the equation, at least temporarily.
Yeah, That's a good way to put it. You lose your focus, you lose your bearing, and you lose your eyes are off of the promise. And so, again, Jacob has God's favor. Now, we talked about this in Habakkuk, and you look throughout the scriptures that the just shall live by faith. And so it's in the midst of these circumstances that doesn't seem to be a following through with what God promises. So Jacob's got to wrestle with this reality that he is now given the promise. The seed will come through him, but yet it just, the experience doesn't seem this way. He now has a brother he's going to physically have to deal with, but it's God who comes to him to set his bearing straight, to put his eyes right on the promise. And I love it how Luther looks at this this passage. And Luther looks at this just kind of the way that a father, an earthly father, kind of plays with his kids. You kind of roughhouse with your kids. You wrestle with them a little bit in this fatherly love, and you kind of you're playing around with them, but you're assuring them that you're there with them in the midst of all of this.
So is part of the fact that he, and we could speak here of kind of the pre-incarnate Christ, but manifests himself as a physical being to physically wrestle with Jacob, to deal with him physically, even to kind of, you know, pin him and leave him with a limp, is this assurance that I'm not just kind of looking down from heaven as in your previous vision of me, but I'm down here with you.
Yeah, exactly. So that we see this continuous process of God coming to his people, but coming in a very tangible way. So that when we see these visions in the Old Testament scriptures, we're not talking about just kind of a daydream where you just kind of you think something or you imagine something, but it's a reality where you have the second person of the Holy Trinity who comes to reveal the Father. And so this is consistent throughout the Old Testament text in a very tangible way. And so it's made known to us that this is tangible, that they're actually wrestling. I mean, you have other texts in Genesis where you have the second person of the Holy Trinity, the pre-incarnate Christ, eating. And so you have this very tangible way that is ultimately showing forth to us the incarnation, that God will come in a tangible way, in a very unique way, when he takes upon flesh of the Virgin Mary so that he can be crucified, so that he can be this sacrifice for sin. But what's striking here is that it's God who comes in God's weakness, not in God's power. And that's what's very interesting about this passage. So it's not God who comes to Jacob and just knocks him over the head and says, "What's wrong with you?" But it's God who comes in his weakness. He wrestles with Jacob, and Jacob's actually prevailing. So this is Jacob who is wrestling with God and prevailing. But then in the end, God just kind of touches him, boom, just to show him that, hey, you're not the master over God, of course, but it's God who comes in weakness, not in power. So he doesn't just come to Jacob and say, submit and drop to your knees, but he's wrestling with him.
Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is our guest, part of our series, Christ in the Old Testament. We're talking about Jacob wrestling with God. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York. Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama. Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri. The Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California. St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin. And St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org and click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
An oasis in the desert of pop American Christianity. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.
Here's an opportunity for you to get up to 75% off many of the resources you hear us promote on Issues Etc. It's Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale from 8 in the morning until noon on Saturday, November the 2nd. Concordia Publishing House is located south of Interstate 44 at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. The 2013 warehouse sale, Saturday morning, November the 2nd at Concordia Publishing House, 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is our guest. Our series with him, Christ in the Old Testament, continues as we're looking at Genesis 32, the story of Jacob wrestling with God. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. You said something before the break that I think is key here, that God does not come to coerce or overpower Jacob, but to engage him in a real tangible way. What does that weak approach of God tell you, Pastor Ketchelmeyer?
Well, it teaches us what kind of a creator we have. Again, we don't have a creator who's just a watchmaker, winds up creation and just walks away, but we actually have a creator who's also the redeemer, one who engages creation, who comes to dwell with sinners. So he comes to us in our weakness, and so he comes in weakness. And this all points towards the whole incarnation, so that when Christ is born of the Virgin, conceived by the Holy Spirit, you have one who suffers, one who is rejected. And that's the whole story throughout the Old Testament history, that God continues to come to his people, yet his very own people reject him. So this is how God comes in his weakness rather than in his power, just coercing and saying, you must submit because I am the Almighty. But he comes in his weakness to give to us mercy and grace, and he's slow to anger and patient with us and giving to us forgiveness.
Is this, would you be so bold as to say that this is, in fact, the pre-incarnate Christ, the second person of the Trinity? Because in I know that, you know, we're working toward the passage where John tells us in the prologue to the gospel, the only one who has ever seen God, and this incident is about seeing God, is the one who's at his side, the only begotten Son.
Yeah, and that's an interesting passage in John chapter 1, because it says, no one has ever seen God. But now, when you go back to your Sunday school lessons as a kid, you say, well, Jacob did, Moses did. You kind of go through the list and you say, well, a lot of people saw God. And so what we know is that no one's ever seen God, but what they've seen is the only begotten God, the monogenes, who is the one who makes God known. So that the second person of the Holy Trinity is the one who comes in this weakness, the one who comes to bear with us. And so you'll get this language in the Old Testament, kind of the backside of God, rather than God in his full glory. Because we would not be able to see God in his full glory, but we see God who comes to us. And so throughout the Old Testament, you have this language of the Malach Yahweh, the messenger of the Lord, or as we typically say in English, the angel of the Lord, which is teaching us this distinction in persons between the Father and the Son, that the Father sends the Son, and the Son is the sent one. And as the sent one, he's the one who comes to us, seeking us, looking for us, dwelling with us in our sin, to take our sin upon himself.
This incident has a lot to do with names. He asks Jacob's name, and then he changes it. And then Jacob asks his name, and he won't give it, but Jacob gives this place, at least, a name. What's going on here, Pastor Ketchelmeyer?
Well, and you follow in the Old Testament scriptures, names are important. So, I mean, in American English, you know, you just name a name because you think it sounds neat. But in the Old Testament scriptures, you watch the names and see what's taking place. And this also helps to reveal to us what's going on in the passage. Because is this an angel, just merely a created messenger who's a spirit being, or is this the second person of the Holy Trinity who comes to reveal the Father? Which is it? And so you'll know by the text, because in the text will clue you in. So like in chapter 28, when the Son reveals the Father to Jacob, he names the place Beth-El, which is house of God. And so you have this house of God. And then later on in Genesis chapter 31, the Moloch Elohim comes to Jacob, and he says, I am the God of Beth-El. So I'm the one who came to you at the place called house of God. And so you have this whole indicator teaching to us who this is. So now Jacob has this mystery man who starts wrestling with him. And so as you're following the text, you're like, Jacob, who is this guy? As the wrestling match goes on, you want to know who it is. But then finally at the end, when he touches Jacob, he changes his name and he says, you are Israel. You are the one who struggles with God. Okay, you're the one who strives with God, because this the Hebrew word sarah is struggle, to strive, and so Israel is Elohim, God.
What about the name that Jacob assigns to the place then?
Yeah, and so then at the end, Jacob says, this is none other than the face of God. And so this is what he's saying, because I have seen God face to face, and I'm still alive. I've been delivered. So then he names this place Peniel, which is face of God, El being the shortened of Elohim.
And the way he says it is, for I have seen, what does he say here? He says, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. What's Jacob saying there?
Well, again, in God's full glory, in his power, you cannot stand in his presence, for he is holy, and by nature, we are unholy. And so you can't stand in his presence. He's a consuming fire. But what happens here is, this is where God comes in his weakness, so that he allows Jacob to see who he is, one who is going to be with Jacob in the midst of his affliction in a fallen world. And you get this important language that I've seen him face to face, and guess what? He's delivered me. So this is what the second person of the Holy Trinity does. He reveals God. He reveals the Father. He is God, of course, God of God, begotten, not made. And he's also teaching us something very unique, that our God is a God who delivers and preserves life, not to come to destroy it, but to sustain it.
Anne is listening in St. Louis. Anne, thanks for waiting on the line.
Oh, thank you. You're talking about wrestling with God, and I if I remember the story right, Jacob was going to ask for a blessing, and at first it made me think that wrestling with God as he was that a sin? Was that a sinful situation? But then it made me think of a sister, a dear sister of mine, who is wrestling with God in the way that there's rampant alcoholism in her family, and she's tried so hard to be a good wife and mother. She goes out into the woods, cries out to God. She yells at the top of her lungs, wrestles with him in that way. And years ago, I would have thought to yell at him would have been a sinful situation, but she's begging God for help and crying literally and yelling out, crying out to God for help. She's wrestling with him for blessing rather than curse. And that's what I was thinking of as I'm listening to this.
Well, Anne, thank you very much. What are your thoughts there, Pastor Ketchelmeyer?
Well, this is what's amazing throughout the entire Psalter. I mean, you go through the book of Psalms, and you see this over and over again. And this passage will start off and say, I cry by day, but you do not answer. Where are you? And so you have this reality that we are real flesh and blood human beings still living in a fallen world, but with the promise of redemption. And so we're holding the promise, we're justified by faith, but experience is showing us other things. It doesn't seem like we're favored with God. And so what the Lord loves to hear is his people taking his promises upon their lips and speaking it back into his ears, reminding God of his promises. And so, I mean, you see this, like, ultimately comes to Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? And this is the psalm that Jesus himself speaks on the cross when he is forsaken and abandoned by the Father because of our sin. But because of Psalm 22, that he has come to suffer for us and with us, then we are able to say Psalm 23 and know that even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we shall fear no evil because the Lord is our shepherd. The Jesus who laid down his life is the shepherd who has also taken his life up again for his sheep. And so this is the whole pattern of faith throughout the scriptures, that God gives us a promise and we continue to live by faith, trusting in that promise and wrestling with it. Because, you know, you know you have favor with God, but it seems like God hates you because something in your life is going wrong. But then we know again the promise that we hear once again, that God promises to work for the good for all those who love him. So we have that promise to cling to, and it's a wrestling with the reality that we have in the promise and the reality that we face in real life.
With only 30 seconds here, the little footnote about not eating the thigh meat or whatever because of the hip, I've always puzzled over that, but it occurred to me a couple years ago that this is a way that the author tips his hand with regard to that very promise you were talking about, because he doesn't just talk about Israel's family, he says the people of Israel, the very people that were promised that had not yet come into existence through this very man, Jacob. Is that a good way of reading that little footnote?
Oh, yes. See, so that, I mean, that's great. That's perfect. So that the people of God take these promises and they cling to them, and then they're to teach them to their children. And so you use these opportunities to teach. I mean, this is the whole Passover meal. You get to the Passover meal and you ask the question, why do we do these things? We do these things because the Lord our God is the one who keeps his promises. He made a promise to our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he is faithful to his promise. He's the one who has redeemed us out of slavery in Egypt. He is the one who will deliver us from sin, death, and the devil. And so all of these meals are excellent times where you can once again refocus. Your compass is off a kilter, but you get your bearings straight again. And ultimately, you have the perfect supper in the Lord's Supper, where his focus is he comes to you right now in the bread and the wine, giving you the body for your life and his blood for your forgiveness.
Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Los Alamos, New Mexico, host of a weekly radio show called Redeemer Theological Academy. You'll find out more about Redeemer Theological Academy at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Brian, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get biographies of Luke the Evangelist from Dr. Arthur Just of Concordia Theological Seminary, Katie Luther from Professor Mark DeGarmo of Bethany Lutheran College, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Thanks to the Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word and Pastor Al Lunenburg for renewing their membership in our congregational sponsorship program called the Issues Etc. 300. Your congregation can join the Issues Etc. 300, or if they're already part of the 300, they can renew their membership. This is the time to do it, with budget planning underway and budgets being set for the new fiscal year. Find out more about how your congregation can join or renew their membership in the Issues Etc. 300 by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. You'll find a one-page flyer. Download it, print it off, take it to your congregation, ask them to join the Issues Etc. 300. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address: Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Issues Etc. Reformation Week begins October 21st. 5 days of Reformation-themed programs with some of your favorite guests. And here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Reformation Week. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Reformation Week bulletin insert. We have 5 different bulletin inserts for each time zone. Issues Etc. Reformation Week.